The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
We're kicking things off today, though, with the second of our debates, our general election debates. Earlier in the week, we debated the issue of infrastructure, and that's how we're going to approach this over the next, well, it's only the next couple of weeks. Now, we're going to look at things issue by issue. We're going to get to housing and healthcare and immigration and everything else. Today, we are looking at the cost of living. With me in studio, Piers Doherty, who's the deputy leader of Sinn Féin, party spokesperson on finance and a candidate in Donegal. Kate O'Connell, who is a former TD, of course, and an independent general election candidate in Dublin Bay South. Paul Murphy is a People Before Profit TD running in Dublin South West. Again, and Barry Ward, Fine Gael Senator, party spokesperson on justice and a candidate in the Dunleary constituency. You're all very, very welcome. Barry, I might start with you as, I guess, the government rep, if I'll describe you that way, amongst us. How would you describe the factors that have pushed up the cost of living in this country? To what extent would you allege that they are kind of outside the government's control?
Well, they are almost exclusively outside the government's control. The most obvious one is the cost of energy that resulted from the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And that is has affected the whole continent of Europe. There are obviously other ones that have even knocked on from that in terms of food prices and things like that. But the reality is that we still have a lot of imports in this country. And so international cost fluctuations affect the cost of goods in this country as well. So the vast majority of the effects on the cost of living have been outside the government's control.
The vast majority. So what ones have been within the government's
well,
control?
Well, I mean, obviously housing has an impact on people's control. Not that that's an inherited issue for the government and all the rest, but the fact that costs, the cost of accommodation generally in terms of housing and rental has increased is obviously has had an impact on people. And all of us around this table as we go around the doors are hearing that. So that's one of them. The government is still got a is putting a plan in place to deal with that, and that will happen, but it is one of the things that's impacting on people at the moment.
So given, as you say, that these are all outside of your control, so many of them outside your control, is there anything that the government can do about them?
Well, there is. I mean, the reality is that it won't be possible to ever insulate everyone from all the effects of changes in international prices. But the government has invested very significantly, both in temporary and permanent measures. So there's almost 3 billion euro in permanent cost of living measures in the last 2 years. There's over 5 billion in the temporary cost of living measures in the last 2 years as well. Cut childcare costs, we've reduced third level fees. There's measures in budget 2025 for working families and for the income threshold for release under the cost of living. State pension has been increased, specifically increased measures in relation to people such as carers, to pensioners, to people in receipt of those payments. There's a whole range of measures, and I can keep going if you'll allow
me to. You don't
have to.
I'll go to Kate on that. Kate?
Well, I mean, I think we elect governments to be in control, and that's the point of it all, that those people, we believe, I believe in representative democracy and having a varied Oireachtas and for expertise to come from many areas. And there's a taint, I mean, 14 years or so after the economic crash, that there's a feeling amongst people when I'm out knocking on doors that there's a smell of the Celtic tiger off the credit card economics and once-off payments that have been exercised at the minute. And it seems that there's a constant of crisis or emergency. You've got the crisis in the housing. You've got the crisis in healthcare. These things are long-standing issues that have not been addressed despite 14 years of Fine Gael being in government. Now, there have been positives, and the emergency response in terms of COVID has gained accreditation in terms of the right response and also in terms of our response to the war in Ukraine and things that are completely outside our control. But you can't lurch from crisis to crisis, and people cannot plan their lives, no matter if you're a retired person on a fixed income or you're a family raising children. Everybody I'm speaking to, from Irish Town across through Sandymount and across to Dublin 4 and Dublin 6, are telling me, working families, that they do not have any money left in their bank account.
So how differently then,
how
differently would you have dealt with the spike in energy costs after Russia invaded Ukraine?
Obviously, there has to be an emergency response in the immediate aftermath of an emergency. But in terms of, like, I'm looking at this from household costs and cost of living, but also some of the government policies that have been enacted in recent months have actually led to the spiralling costs for small businesses. Auto enrolment of pensions is a massive cost coming down the line for small businesses that has been proposed by the government. It is a noble idea, But the investment of the government is one third of the individual's investment. Mm. So if Paul is working in a small and medium enterprise, next year he will have to contribute 1.5% of his wages, as will the employer. But the government's only contributing 0.5% into that. So that increased cost base coming into small business will actually have a knock on it. Somebody has to pay. Small and medium enterprises in this country aren't massively profitable generally. They bounce along the bottom, but they employ huge amounts of people, 98% of the people, but also they keep our communities alive. So some of the noble actions of government had unintended consequences, one in particular being that is all bedded down already, is the statutory sick pay. So if you have a company with 45 people employed, if everyone takes a week off sick, that's one person less employed in your organisation. And that is a problem for small and medium enterprise. And the government have rolled back and not increased it.
Would you accept the reality that a lot of the influencing factors when it comes to cost of living were outside the government's control? They were external and the government has responded as best they can.
There was some of them, but there was many of them that were inside the government's control. And the duty of a government is to respond and to respond accordingly. And, you know, people will say a lot of things during this election campaign, but if you listen to the lived experience of people out there, they'll tell you that they feel poorer than they were 5 years ago. That's the reality. They see it in their shopping baskets. They see it in motor insurance. They see it in the price of petrol and diesel. They see it in, you know, in rents. They see it in their mortgages. And that is the reality. And we look at some of those issues individually. Petrol and diesel. This government increased the price of petrol and diesel. Actually, they plan to increase it.
If
right
people's
out.
Mortgages went up, though, that's to do really with European Central Bank rates. I'm not sure what Barry's government are meant to do about that.
Well, let me just finish the point. This government planned to put up the price of petrol and diesel to 2030. Rents is something that the government can actually deal with. We've called for a ban on rent increases and putting a month's rent back into renters' pockets. Rents, new rents, have gone up by €6,000 since Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael went into government on their own. We put forward the idea of a mortgage interest relief. It was Sinn Féin who argued that because we know that people need relief and we will extend that during if we are elected to the next government. So there are many things that the government can do to actually support people. But crucially, some of the issues are outside of our control. You asked in relation to what we should have done in terms of energy. There should have been a windfall tax in these energy companies. It didn't happen. Like, it was absolutely appalling that energy prices were increasing and yet these companies were making super profits and the government were sitting back and washing their hands. So we have a package which includes abolishing the USC for all workers for the first €45,000 that workers earn. It is making sure that businesses are supported by making sure that VAT is reduced to 9% for the food sector and the likes of the hospitality and hairdressing sector. A permanent reduction would be introduced in a mini budget, and also delivering €10 a day childcare from September next year to actually reduce the cost substantially in relation to the cost for parents. And that doesn't just apply to formal childcare settings. It crucially applies to where most of our children are being minded, which is childminders.
Paul Murphy, how much more radical should the government have been in terms of their intervention when costs began to spiral a couple of years ago?
Well, I think the problem is that the government was under political pressure, under pressure of people on the streets, responding with some very, very short-term, once-off measures. We give you €125 electricity credit here, €125 electricity credit there, but not dealing with the structural issues in terms of how this economy is organised. And actually, the driving factor in terms of the inflation we've seen, which is profiteering. I mean, there are multiple economists, ECB economists, US economists, Irish economists, who would say that two-thirds of what we'd seen in terms of cost of living increases are a consequence of profiteering. And because the government refused to match the electricity credits with any sort of price controls, the result was simply that the money passed through people's pockets, through their bank accounts, and then ended up on the very substantial balance sheets of the electricity companies. So what is needed is an approach to reject the idea that the market is the way to deliver housing, the market is the way to deliver childcare, the market is the way to deliver electricity. And electricity is a very, very good example, because before we had privatisation in this country, we had literally the lowest electricity costs in Europe. We now have the second highest electricity costs in Europe. And so you have a bizarre situation where ESB, which is a state-owned company, made profits last year of almost €1 billion. That's €500 for every single household in the country. But they are legally set up on a for-profit commercial mandate, and that money cannot be used to reduce people's bills because of this creation of an artificial market. So that needs to be reversed. Yeah. Let's run it on a not-for-profit basis, and on that basis, people's bills could be substantially reduced.
Barry Ward, I'm sure you disagree with the contention that the fundamentals of the kind of the economic structure are unsound, but it is a statement of fact that the energy companies have enjoyed bumper profits, and not just energy companies, the kind of big grocery multiples as well in this country are rolling in money when people are struggling to buy those groceries.
Well, there's a couple of things there. I mean, Paul's basic premise seems to be that we should control prices, that nothing should be left to the market, that everything should be controlled centrally by government. Now, our economy fundamentally moved away from that model in the 1980s, and we are part of a European market that doesn't allow or doesn't want to have a price control situation. So let's say we do say to any company, be it grocers or electricity companies, whatever, you may not sell your product for more than this. That's a totally artificial price, and it doesn't allow for fluctuations in the costs that they have for generating that product, either importing goods to sell in supermarkets or generating electricity or importing electricity, whatever it is. So Paul's outdated model is not going to work, and it'll actually store up future problems. We cannot start by managing this situation by saying everything must be frozen, prices must be at this level and can never change. He makes points about the ESB profits, but fundamentally ignores the fact that the ESB is a large company that does not make money alone from electricity generation or sale. It has many other investments. And he's right, it is set up as a profit-making body because it is owned by the taxpayers and it is never meant to make a loss. And we know if you had a situation where they could just give away electricity for free, then the taxpayers would be paying for it through a different vein. But the point that is also made is, and Pierce makes the point, for example, about windfall profits, as if somehow a lack of money garnered by the state was the cause of increased energy prices, when we know that that was not the case. Unfortunately, a lot of electricity in Ireland is generated through fossil fuels. Fossil fuels that are imported, the price of which went through the roof. A windfall tax, I personally don't have a problem with that, but it would not have changed the situation. All it would have done is taken more money from the companies. Don't have a problem with that. But the reality is what the government did was it insulated people to the greatest extent possible by putting in place supports for households all around this country to help them deal with the increased cost of electricity. And that was very effective.
Yeah, Piers, on the windfall tax point, I mean, a lack of money hasn't been the issue that this government has had to face. They've had so much spare money, they've been putting it into kind of multiple rainy day funds. So yeah, windfall tax might have buffered those funds a little bit, but it wasn't a problem that the government faced in terms of intervention. They had money to intervene and they did intervene.
Well, Barry makes the point of, you know,
and they intervened in a way that I'm sure Barry didn't use this word, but some of his colleagues have used this word, and he might later, in a prudent way, in a way that didn't put the government on the hook for continued spending year after year.
Well, look, Barry makes a case for why they didn't intervene in the way that they did. They had billions of euro, but yet people feel worse off. And of course, you can structure a windfall tax in a way that is punitive, where you make excess profits. We're not talking about the normal profits of a company that would happen in a year-to-year scenario. They made eye-watering profits during this time, and they made it off the back of ordinary people who are listening to your show, who were put to the pin of their collar. So other countries have looked at windfall tax, which says that a portion of profits above this will be hit with a punitive tax. What does that do? It actually tells the company, look, there's no point having these eye-watering profits because it's going to go in tax. What we should actually do is not be charging our customers the level that we should be charging. But look, there's other areas.
All those countries still had increases in their electricity.
And it's not just energy companies that are making eye-watering profits. Insurance companies. The central bank came out a number of years ago and said that insurance companies were making bumper profits. Like, we've had insurance companies making profits in excess of one FBD. I think their profits went up 23%. Other companies went up actually more than that. Barry Ward's party, along with Fianna Fáil, are blocking legislation that would allow for accountability to make sure that the reforms that were introduced in the Dáil, that those savings would be passed on to customers as opposed to bumpering the profits of the consumer. So the idea that politicians can do nothing is absolutely nonsense. And if I were Minister for Finance, I'm telling you now that I know whose back I would have all the time. And that would be ordinary customers, ordinary motorists, ordinary business people who are being fleeced either by insurance companies or by energy companies.
Kate O'Connell, had you been re-elected in 2020 on the Fine Gael ticket, at what point over the last 4 years would you have voiced opposition to the direction the government was taking?
I don't think ever been part of the Fine Gael party stopped me from voicing opposition to anything. I was well
maybe
able
that was
to. Well, maybe that is in there lies the problem. But when you're elected by people to represent them. I believe in being the voice of the people. To reference the spare money comment, I mean, it's very difficult for people to look at, and it's really irritating the public, how there could be a reference to spare money and investment in a rainy day fund when people are minus every month in their bank account. And one could call it prudent, but I would call it unimaginative. I would call it quite boring that you would just put money into a savings account as opposed to investing in the infrastructure of our state and in projects that will advance the state. It's almost like, you know, I remember someone referred to the last 10 years, but I mean, we have been in a stagnation since.
It's a slightly different issue now, investing that excess money in infrastructure.
Well, people want to see,
dealing with the cost of groceries.
People feel that they're paying Nordic taxes and they're getting very bad services. We are a wealthy country, and it's frustrating people that there's not investment in advancement of the state and progressing it. There's almost like it's been held back by a lack of imagination, and prudence has been given as the reason, but I just think it's lack of imagination.
Paul, one listener here mixes you up with Owen Murphy. Maybe that's the first time that's ever happened. It's a South Dublin thing, perhaps.
That would be a fun debate.
We both agree that Fine Gael is not interested in dealing with the housing crisis.
Okay, well, listen, somebody else, please ask Paul to give examples of countries that have imposed the types of price controls he would like successfully. And they mentioned Venezuela as well. That's from Ed.
I think in the course of the recent inflation, France imposed price controls on some particular goods, and they have an impact in those areas. I'd make a point related to what Kate is saying about, actually, with the windfall taxes that we have, if you invested them in a massive expansion of what the public is offered from their taxes, actually, it would have an impact on the cost of living crisis. So if you have a young child, you're spending over 10,000 euros a year for childcare. The average family in this country spends almost 3,000 euros a year on healthcare. Those are things that should not be in the market. They are not things that people should have to fork out of their pocket to pay for on a per-use basis. It should be paid for through progressive taxation.
Well, so that's the kind of make childcare an awful lot cheaper, according to the manifesto.
They do, and they're borrowing from our clothes, from our manifesto in 2020, and every party is now talking about public childcare, but we're the only ones who are saying we should have a national childcare service, just as education is free. At one stage in this country, you had to pay for secondary level education. That is a good thing. I don't think anyone wants to go back to paying for secondary level education. Of course we should have free, publicly provided childcare. And again, that reduces by taking these things out of the market, by decommodifying them, same in terms of public transport, the same in terms of healthcare.
But that needs investment in workers.
Absolutely. And we have the money to do that.
We constantly hear, and the evidence is there, that the first year of a child's life is when it's laid down essentially for their progress. And then we expect to employ low-paid workers and have no career progression to mind our children. The investment needs to be in the childcare workers. To me, and for the service I've received through the ECHI scheme over the years, those people are the most important person in your life at that point, and they need to be respected. And there's many people who couldn't get through a day working in a creche, and I admire those people, but they need to be respected and they need to have a career pathway. And what's more important, they need to live within our communities. The idea that people will be commuting a number of hours to work for a low wage, minding our children, it's disrespectful. Yeah. But it's actually also generally women that end up staying at home longer when there's no creche places. So it doesn't matter how cheap it is, how free it is, you need the workers.
Wages in a couple of minutes. I'm going to ask Barry whether Fine Gael really are stealing people before profit clothing and a whole lot more besides. Housing is a big issue that we're debating another day, but I suspect we'll get into a little bit of housing as well after this very quick break. Piers Doherty, Sinn Féin, Kate O'Connell, Independent, Paul Murphy, People Before Profit, Barry Ward, Fine Gael, all still with me discussing cost of living issues with a view to the general election polling day on the 29th of November. We're going to talk about housing in much more detail another day, but it's the big bill in most people's lives. So I do want to talk about it for a few minutes. I mean, Barry, I know you're going to say you've got the solution to this, but you've been saying that for quite some time. Is there any reason anyone should believe you?
Well, yeah, the figures are there to show that the delivery of housing is ramping up and up and up, and the targets have been set by...
There's other figures there now I could quote. Rent on the up and up, house prices on the up and up, homeless figures on the up and up.
Well, the most important thing in housing is delivery of supply.
Well, I'd say the most important thing in housing is how much it's costing people every month.
Well, actually, no, because I think if the one leads to the other, if the supply were there, that it would deal with the price. So hang on a second, Pierce. I mean, I'm no economist now, but if you're telling me there's loads of houses, it's not going to affect the prices.
Let me make the point. You talk about just the solution is the supply. Of the supply that's happening in this city here, who's actually buying those? Mm-hmm. It's vulture funds that are buying them.
I know you love this, right?
90% are bought by funds. 6,000 apartments last year were bought by funds. They have increased.
Yeah, that's last year. Not a single build for rent project has been approved this year.
Since Hughes came into office, the number of apartments that are being bought by funds in this city has increased by sixfold. Yet the number that is available to ordinary punters to buy has remained static.
The answer.
So it's not just about supply, it's actually... Well,
let Barry answer the question.
There's no denying whatsoever, whatever way it's provided, the answer to this problem is supply. Whether that supply is through rental property, through social housing, through private purchase, or whatever it might be, when the supply is there, that is what is going to affect A, the ability of people to actually have a home to live in, and B, the price they're going to have to pay for it. Because the more there is, it's a simple economic proposition, supply and demand. When the supply is met, the demand decreases and therefore the price decreases. That's a very simple concept. Now, you can quibble. You can quibble with the manner in which it's delivered, but the reality is the supply is not...
And let me finish the point, and then you can come in, Pierce.
Just to be absolutely clear, of those 40,000 houses delivered this year, 18,000 are social houses. There are houses that are directly affecting housing lists and reducing them. So don't tell me the supply isn't there. But every facet of this problem, there are lots of different ways in which we have to address it. And build to rent is one of them. I live in one of those apartments. They compete absolutely with similar sized private landlord apartments in the area and with any other kind of rental apartment.
Okay, let's now just deal with some facts, Barry. And since Hughes came into government with Fianna Fáil, the reality is funds are buying up homes in this city. 90% of them are being bought by funds.
Not this year.
Let me just make the point.
Let's talk about facts. Not this year.
Barry, let me just make the point. These are CSO figures. 90% are bought up by institutional investors. They are not getting into the hands of first-time buyers. That is the problem, and that has increased sixfold.
That figure is from 2023.
Because there are no figures for this year.
Institutional investors includes approved housing bodies and local authorities.
Not in relation to that figure. The second thing is this year, you make a claim that there's 40,000 houses this year. Nobody believes that. First of all, the facts are, again according to the CSO, that Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil have delivered less houses so far this year than they did for the same period last year. That is undisputed fact according to the CSO. And the third issue is that in this city, house prices have gone up by €100,000 since Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael came into government. That is why home ownership has collapsed for the under 40s. That is why there is 100,000 less people under the age of 40 today that owns their own home. That is why under Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael that the average age of owning your own home is 39, and so many people feel that this country offers them no more home and they have to put their life in shock. And that is why we need a change of government.
Under schemes that Sinn Féin has opposed, 500 first-time buyers are getting into new houses a week. 500. And those people wouldn't be getting houses at all if Sinn Féin had their way.
The majority of those are not new houses, they're second-hand homes, Barry.
The reality is that the normal supply and demand model does not apply to housing. It's different because everyone needs it and everyone needs a home in order to live their lives. It is true, and Pierce is correct to say, in this constituency, the heart of Dublin, we are looking at a block at the end of Eglinton Road. We're looking at a block down in Harold's Cross that were excluded. People were excluded from buying them because they were bought by those funds that came in and were given preferential status at the crash. There was no need to have no expiry date on the exit on the exit of those groups. And they have distorted the market that we have families that can never realistically have the dream of owning their own home, that are losing money every month into rent, and they're rearing their families in a way that people were never supposed to rear families. Constantly being the risk of inflation in the rent. And it's people can see it. There's no point talking about 40,000 and pointing to cranes as people walk down the road. The reality is many people have adult children living in their homes and they're running to stay still, no matter how their wages increase, the prices are coming up.
And the increase in that type of supply you talk about, that kind of fancy block of flats at the end of Eglinton Road, is it not that it's trickled down, that at the moment people are paying an inordinate amount of money to live in a kind of a glorified garden shed? And actually what happens with the market is not that those new bills are necessarily cheap to rent, but that you take out all of that other poor supply at the other end of the market and the house shares become cheaper.
Well, the reality is that those places are costing up on 3,000 a month for people. They're taking a disproportionate amount of people's wages. They're taking a disproportionate amount of people's wages that's leaving them.
But some economists would say, when you point at these and say they should, the rent in those big brand new spanking apartments should be an awful lot cheaper, you're missing the point. The point isn't that they'll be cheap. The point is that they will make other supply cheaper. That's what an economist would say.
The beauty about this here is we have an expert housing commission, commissioned by Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and they've told us that until we are actually hitting targets way above what Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil have projected, then the crisis is going to get worse every year. You have to get to a point, and that point we're so far off it. And the ambition that these two parties have in this general election actually doesn't even meet.
And no matter how many times you tell people supply is increased, it doesn't matter if they're still living upstairs. It doesn't actually matter how many times you say
Paul
to them.
Paul Murphy,
I think the idea that anyone would buy that we should re-elect Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael because things are getting better in terms of the housing market, I just think that is not living in reality. People have experienced, since 2016, rents have doubled for people. That's 2.5 grand, 3 grand for extremely normal apartments or houses. Homelessness, when Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael first came together in 2016, was just over 5,000 people. When we had the last general election, it was just over 10,000. It's now at 15,000. If we re-elect Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, rents will double again. Homelessness will go up to 20,000. People understand that, like, past performance, in this case, is a pretty good guide to what's going to happen. So what Barry is in favour of has been tried and has been failed. And what that is,
are you not
is that, that is incentivizing the market. It's throwing money at private developers. It's money, other money to private developers through the first time buyers grant, which is designed to keep property prices artificially high, was lobbied for by the Construction Industry Federation for that purpose. So what has happened is a massive transfer of wealth from people who have no property or people who have one property to those who own loads and loads of properties. There's massive profiteering taking place. And again,
is there, maybe there's not enough profiteering?
No.
But you go back to the mid-noughties when there was the profiteering was at a much greater scale than it was today, and the house building was at a much greater scale. We're kind of terrified of developers and builders being allowed to be wealthy again.
But some of the profiteering that's happening now is actually taking the form of big developers sitting on planning permissions because they think it'll make more sense. They can make even more profits into the future. And so we have a market-based approach to housing as opposed to saying housing is a basic need for people, and that means the state needs to intervene in a major way. It means we need to use the ABEL money to capitalise a state construction company to build 30,000 social houses a year, 5,000 affordable houses a year. We should have universal access to public housing.
We probably need that ABEL money to actually build the sewerage systems for those houses.
But all that is the kind of stuff that a state construction company actually needs to do.
Barry, I'll come back to you in a moment.
But like homelessness has massive social impacts. I mean, this the amount of time that we've been in a crisis with housing. There are children that have lived their whole teenage years, have done their secondary school living out of a hotel, that have been passed around between stable family members. This has a real impact. And I've employed these people that have lived some of their lives with their mothers or their fathers in hotel accommodation. And that is no way to bring up the next generation. I don't know how I would be if my teenage years were spent in a hotel room with my smaller brothers and sisters. That is a massive social and personal impact for the outcomes of those children. And that is a serious failing of this government. The social impact of the lack of action on housing and the lack of provision of affordable housing for families, and an almost acceptance that this is the way it is.
There's absolutely no acceptance.
And that all over Europe, this is the way it is.
There is not a
and we'll just have to suck it up and get over it. It's not on, and it's no way to run a society.
There is not a single member of the government or any of the parties in government that thinks that housing is in a good space. This is a legacy issue that was inherited from 2011.
That's 14 years, Barry. Like, come on.
14 years.
You should power 5,000 days.
It's a generation. It's a generation's lives are destroyed.
Why don't you just let me finish a sentence, right? The first 5 years of Enda Kenny's government were designed to put the government, the economy back together, which it did well ahead of the time that any of your party said that it would. And then after buildings started to ramp up.
That's 9 years, Barry.
I'll come to that, Piers.
Record homelessness.
Barry, finish the sentence myself. The reality is that during that time, all buildings stopped. Tradespeople left. Plumbers, electricians.
We don't need another history lesson, Barry.
No, we don't, Kate. But
you're giving it. You're giving it.
You're suggesting we think it's acceptable. We aren't.
That's why
we have ramped up.
Talk to Owen Murphy.
Hang on a second now. I'm going to finish the paragraph that I started, okay? The reality
finish the sentence.
Everybody else has had a good long go here, and misrepresentations have been made about what actually happened. So, for example, Pierce talks about ambition when he knows that the ambition of this government is well beyond 40,000. It's 50,000 more. That's what Simon Harris
does.
And by the way, at the last election, we exceeded the targets that were set by Sinn Féin. We talk about supply. Somehow, Paul denies that supply is going to solve the problem. Supply is exactly the problem, and we are ramping it up all the time. Okay, you can argue about how it's provided, but we know that if there are more houses there, there'll be more people to move into them, and it'll solve the problem. Here, and everybody has ignored the fact that the population is 800,000 people more than
very quickly. Barry was talking about your plumbers, your plasters, and all that leaving, and people did leave when Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael wrecked the economy. Right? That's without a doubt. I was talking to Phil in Lifford the last day. He's an electrician. He's going to Australia. You know why? Because his course is supposed to take him 4 years, and it's taken him 6 years now. Because they can't, apprenticeships, one out of six trades apprenticeships are leaving because the course has taken 6 years because of the mess that you have done. Your party leader, the Taoiseach, was the minister that oversaw this. That is why people are not there. So you're talking about the history of the crash 14 years ago. Right here, right now, you can't even fix the apprenticeship
program. I'm correcting the suggestion from you.
You can't even fix the apprenticeship program. And in relation to your ambition...
Simon Harris did an enormous amount of work bringing more and more people into apprenticeship programs that led to better qualifications, better pay afterwards.
The fact is that in trades apprenticeships, one in six are leaving. These are people who are signing up to be plumbers, electricians, plasters, they're leaving.
There are vastly more apprenticeships now than there were when Simon Harris came in. They're not trade apprenticeships.
There are other types of apprenticeships.
So there are more apprenticeships, so a portion of them are moving. Of course, people are always leaving. In fairness, the hairdresser is not going to build a house.
Paul Murphy, I want to put one question to you that's come in as well. And it's just around the idea of a state construction company, and people maybe in the abstract don't have a problem with it. What they worry about is that they look at things like bike sheds and security huts or the HSE annual spend, and they just think, I can't trust a big state entity. It's just going to be kind of bureaucratic, bloated and uneconomic.
Yes. So where did the money go in the bike shed? Went to a private company, Sensori, set up by Michael Stone, the guy who put up Pascal Donoghue's posters for free. Where did the money go in the children's hospital? It went to BAM, a private company, which has a record of underbidding for projects and then hiking projects, and obviously that was signed off by Simon Harris.
Yeah.
Before BAM get in touch,
BAM would absolutely deny this.
Sure,
that's their business model. Pascal Donoghue and Michael Stone would contest that the bike shed had anything to do with their relationship. Where did the money
for the security hood go? It went to a private company. So what has happened is actually the state, the OPW, has withdrawn from directly doing these projects that would have been done in the past by the OPW. Instead, they're outsourced to private companies. And so I made €20 million last year in contracts from the OPW. So actually, all those examples of state company waste.
You mean like employees of the state, as opposed to a state company engaging private contractors?
Correct. An actual.
But then is the
state
not the example
company
then that people worry about?
Sure, but we like a semi-state company set up precisely saying to apprenticeships, come here. And promising that they'll be able to finish their apprenticeships in time.
What you do when the expertise isn't within the state sector? You're dealing with highly specialist projects in some instances. Do you not want to bring in any private contractor? I'm not talking about the bike shed, but
we have to bring that expertise into the state sector, because instead of allowing the market to dictate what is built, that it's most profitable to build hotels, it's hotels that gets built. It's most profitable to build office blocks get built.
But most profitable to build luxury apartments get built.
Do you know what? Lots of people have been texting in about other issues as well, and childcare amongst them, and I know kind of different parties' childcare policies as well being reported in newspapers and radio and television today. So we're going to talk about that after a very quick break. Piers Doherty, Sinn Féin, Kate O'Connell, Independent, Paul Murphy, People Before Profit, Barry Ward, Fine Gael, all still with me. Paul, you talked about the cost of childcare a little bit earlier. Just expand on how People Before Profit would make it cheaper to rear a child in this country.
Yeah, so at the moment, the model of childcare is effectively a mostly privately owned, privately run model, but with a lot of public money going into it, as well as the parents spending €1,000 a month or whatever the equivalent of an extra mortgage. And that is a model that is really, really broken. I mean, the only people it works for is the big providers, you know, your giraffes. They're making good, big money, but it doesn't work for parents. They really struggle to find a place because there's not rational planning about it. And then it's obviously costing an arm and a leg. It doesn't cost for workers. It doesn't work for workers who are extremely poorly paid, and they should be paid the equivalent of primary school teachers. These are early years educators, but they're on extremely low pay. And it doesn't work for a lot of small providers who are kind of inundated with bureaucracy, filling out paperwork, all to get into the schemes, to get the funding and so on. So we need a completely different model of childcare, which is based on the public provision of childcare. So integrating the small operators into the system, saying to them, we'd love for you to come into this public system. We'd love to give you a decent, guaranteed salary, not to have to deal with all this bureaucracy and stress and so on, and saying that this is literally something that, like primary school, like secondary school, like third level on paper, is actually something that is free, that is paid for through your taxation.
Kate, would you disagree with any of that?
I would. The system isn't broken, I believe. I believe there was no system there originally, and the previous government and the government before it advanced that scheme and gave it more funding. And I have to commend them for that. In my time in Dáil Éireann, Catherine Zappone was the Minister for Children, and I was one of the people. I had a three-month-old baby when I was elected in 2016. And my focus has changed now personally, but at the time it was different. And I went to her with a proposal that we would subvent childcare in the home. Because if you are a person working shift work, if you're a doctor or if you're working the fire services, if you're a guard, as Paul said, that system does not work for you. Mm. The ECHI system doesn't. And it was dismissed outright by the now Minister for Public Expenditure, Pascal John, who dismissed it at the time. And I'm hearing now that it is being considered because there is, as Paul said, a cohort of people that are completely excluded. And childcare for those people is costing them essentially another mortgage. I do agree with Paul that it should be treated as education. I do agree that there has been lack of investment over years because of the legacy of women staying at home and being the person within the home. And also that the jobs themselves are female jobs. Generally, the vast majority of people in the sector are female. But in order to give people, everybody, the opportunity, each member of a family the opportunity, that the same headage payment or subvention per child, regardless of if they're in a state system, in an ECHI scheme, or the parent chooses a childminder in the home. And the parent knows best what's right for their child. And another group of children that are excluded, if you have a child that has a particular need and that needs intervention, the ECHI scheme often doesn't provide for that child. So you have to employ somebody in your home and pay the stamp and the PRSI and the whole lot for them. And that is huge for parents. Parents need to be encouraged to have families and supported in doing so. But children all deserve the same start in life and same opportunities in life.
Pierce, what's the Sinn Féin proposal?
Yeah, well, look, we led the charge in this. We came out very clear with a €10 a day childcare offering.
It's not worth it.
Just let me finish in this here. Let me finish in this here. And we will deliver that from September. So not only is that part of the formal childcare setting in terms of creches, but we will also extend it to childminders. The vast majority of children in the state are cared by childminders, not in the formal setting. So if you reduce only for childcare settings, then what you're going to have is you're going to have huge demand, which already you'll talk to parents, they can't get places in many childcare settings. So you have to do it for both. And that's where the major flaw. Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil are trying to copy what Sinn Féin are doing, but they're only doing it for the childcare settings. It costs 100 million to do it for childcare settings. It costs 240 million to extend it to child minders. That is where you have to actually do the bulk. The second part is you have to have massive expansion then within the capacity of the sector, because there's 300,000 children being catered for. That number will grow, particularly when you make it cheaper. And therefore, we've allowed for not only expansion in terms of the sector, but also wage increases for employees.
Is there a law of unintended consequences thing here about those child minors in the home? How many of them are kind of registered and paying tax?
Well,
I assume they'd have to register with somebody if they're going to be getting state money.
They'll have to register with TUSLA and at the minute there is a very, very small number of childminders who are registered with TUSLA. If you talk to childminders, it's far too complex, far too onerous, and that's why we need a proper registration system that allows for that. But of course, that's a money thing as well. But look, that's the issue that has to be addressed there in terms of, and this is about making it cheaper for parents, but also ensuring that our workers in the system are recognised and valued. And look, I know Kate is saying that the workers weren't there, but Kate, when you were in the Dáil, they were marching in relation and on strike against your political party. When you were in the Dáil, remember that we're the party who put childminders right in centre. That's why immediately there would be a €1.50 increase in terms of their wages and subsequent increases afterwards.
Barry.
This is the Sinn Féin big idea, but they haven't given us an iota of detail of where they're going to find the people to do it. You don't like people interrupt you, Pierce, but you're willing to shout across those of other people. But Fine Gael has cut childcare. You
publish
a plan, but it does not identify where you're going to find the people to carry out this work. It doesn't do that.
Let him have a say.
The detail for where you're going to find the people, and that is the case. And Fine Gael has actually to find the people to do all this childcare, all this new.
They're already doing it.
But they're not. But you're going to need so many more for what you're proposing. But the point is that Fine Gael has reduced the cost of childcare by 50%. That benefits over 220,000 children and families. This year, 33,000 childcare workers, and this is an issue that was raised, saw pay increases and the three-year wait for graduate rates was removed. Childcare facility closures are at a five-year low. Registrations and openings are a five-year high. So the answer is there. Now, in the manifesto that Fine Gael has published, we are proposing to cap childcare costs at €200 per
only
month.
Only for childcare settings, not childminders.
Or €600 for a family with three or more children.
And to expand
early learning places. And that's about 30,000 new early learning places in public early learning and school places. They can be linked to existing childcare facilities. They can be linked to existing early learning centres as well. So the progress is being made there. But what's important to note is, and I've heard a number of people at different meetings, not just in here today, saying that it's a second mortgage. We have halved the cost of it. More needs to be done. But it's progress is being made in that regard.
We're out of time. I wish you all the very best of luck because it's easy for people like me to comment from the sidelines. Another thing to throw your hat in the ring. So good luck on the 29th, everybody. Pierce Doherty, Sinn Féin candidate in Donegal. Kate O'Connell, independent candidate, Dublin Bay South. Paul Murphy, People Before Profit candidate, Dublin Southwest. And Barry Ward running in the constituency of Dunleary.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.